This show is brought to you by MTN. For your everyday moves, try this new MTN app. MTN, SA's best network.
I'm Duncan MacLeod, and this is the Tech Central Show, brought to you today by MTN Business. Visit www.mtnbusiness.co.za to learn more. Now, my guest today is Frederik Zitzman. He is CEO of South Africa's largest e-commerce company, the Naspers-owned and Cape Town-headquartered Takealot Group. Fred is joining me from Cape Town via an online call. Fred, it's great to see you. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's awesome to see you again, Duncan. It's been a while.
It has been a while. Last time was down at your superb offices in the Cape Town City Bowl. I look forward to seeing you again in person at some point soon. But we were just chatting before we start. You're heading into a very important part of the year now, not just for Takealot, but for all retailers in South Africa, online and physical. We just had an interesting report published by Worldwide Works, headed by, of course, by Arthur Goldstuck, who has given a view on the size of the market and the growth. And I think one of the most interesting stats to come out of that report is that the e-commerce market in South Africa is poised to breach the 10% of total retail sales mark. How significant is that?
I think that's quite significant. It's a milestone because if you think about it, we've been lagging emerging markets for some time now, where we were sitting in the mid-single digits. And I think there's a bit of a psychological barrier to break if you go into double digits. I think our development has looked different than other markets, where the grocery vertical, I think you can just look at the listed entities that's published numbers recently. I think the grocery vertical is driving a lot of that penetration, where I think in other markets, grocery didn't take off as quickly as it did in South Africa. But nonetheless, consumers are more digitally active, and that's what we're super excited about.
Good, good. So what's driving the market at the moment? What are the key driving factors? I mean, we saw coming out of COVID, a lot of people were perhaps reluctant to rely or to shop online, buy groceries and all that sort of thing, became quite adept at online shopping. Mm. Do you think that helped convince the market that online retail was the way to go, and that they perhaps a lot of people who are perhaps a bit reluctant, concerned about the security aspects of it, for example, to try it out? And once they've tried it, they found that actually it works really well.
Yeah, so absolutely. I think there was a step change in COVID where people out of necessity were forced to start engaging online. And if you think about what categories potentially led a lot of people into the online channel was groceries, for example. To my earlier point, is that's a low risk, low value transaction, something you're willing to take a bet on. And when that works, you start penetrating into different categories. Now all of a sudden you're happy to buy a TV or maybe a pair of shoes. So I think e-commerce is still very much in its nascence. It's nascent and it's in its infancy just because of, look, there's many ways to look at it. Category-wise, certain categories super highly penetrated. If you look at it geographically, then you start seeing opportunities. If you look at it from a consumer segment perspective, you start realizing there's millions of people that still haven't adopted e-commerce. So I think we've got an exciting 5 to 10 years ahead in terms of e-commerce in South Africa because there's so many people that still need to transact and so many categories that need to mature online. Mm-hmm.
How has this market transformed though over the last few years? We've obviously seen the entry of Amazon. We've seen the entry of Chinese players as well. We've got Walmart operating in this market, although I don't think they've necessarily gained the traction on the e-commerce side that they would be looking for. But with all these international players starting to come into the mix now, how have you seen the dynamics of the market change in recent years, and how is that likely to change in the next few years?
Look, I think just from a broad marketing awareness perspective, when these big names land, of course, they bring with themselves a lot of curiosity from the consumer. So they start engaging online where they historically would not have necessarily traditionally done that. I think that helps the market to develop. It helps the market to formalize where there might have been peripheral fringe customers that said, hey, I'll wait for the big names. But then again, I think it raises the standard. If I can reflect on our last 3 years, it's good to have somebody knocking on your door because it raises your focus. It makes you more deliberate in terms of what you're working on. And it also helps you understand what your strengths are, because you will inadvertently, in a market where there's international competitors coming in with tech that was developed in the US or in India or wherever, we need to play to our strengths. I think outcompeting on the tech side, given the R&D budgets of these global companies, it's going to be hard to compete against that, but we find our niche and we know where we need to compete. So I think in general, the market is attractive at the moment. You can see that with Walmart now doubling down with their own Walmart brand. You even see big financial companies. I think Revolut yesterday over the weekend announced they're going to enter South Africa. So the market is attracting a lot of attention, maybe disproportionately so given the size of the market. But nonetheless, we're very excited about the future.
Do you think these international brands are coming in here because they see the broader Africa opportunity and they see just the demographic, the population growth that's expected on this continent over the next 20, 30 years? And do they see this as like sort of one of the last global opportunities for e-commerce? How is it more a case of, well, we need to be in South Africa for the Africa opportunity rather than saying we're coming into South Africa to compete in South Africa specifically?
Yeah, look, I think you have to think of that question in a couple of ways. So just South Africa is a country, we're growing 1%, if that, GDP, government debt is high, the rand is strengthening, but the market in itself doesn't maybe justify in isolation the amount of international competition, because I believe we have very strong incumbent bricks and mortar retailers, we've got a legacy of fantastic execution and grocery retail. So looking at this only solely on the South African market, you would assume that, geez, this is maybe a little bit of a small, highly competitive market. So you have to assume that the African narrative is one that drives this, especially I think maybe from the US companies where they see the emerging middle class, the younger population of Africa being very attractive, especially in high frequency categories where I think those categories have not been penetrated well in Africa. But I do believe in that narrative and mental model, there's potentially a flaw because I don't think Africa is homogenized in that way, not culturally, not geographically, not infrastructure-wise. So South Africa might not be a good testing ground. But nevertheless, we very much focus on the South African market today.
Okay. And the change in the competitive dynamics in the market with the international players starting to compete here, I guess, would also have helped sharpen Takealot's focus. You've introduced some new products in recent years. Takealot More comes to mind. Maybe talk us through that and what that competitive threat has done for you inside Takealot culturally and your competitive spirit.
Now, look, I think it's you know, we're all South Africans, right? And we don't like being second place. So we've been really doubling down in the last year. Culturally, we've established such a strong internal culture in the organization. We've energized our teams. Our people are passionate. They're excited. And I do believe talent is ultimately where you're going to win. If you don't have the best people, you're not going to win. And in Takealot, we truly believe that people, it's not necessarily always aptitude and qualification, but a lot of times attitude and that guts and resilience. That's where we see a lot of green sprouts in terms of our talent. But the company is definitely more focused. Our group strategy has become much more of a perspective that we have. We see a lot of synergy between Mr. D and Takealot.com. To your point, launching Takealot More has built this bridge and this highway, if I can call it that, between Takealot.com and Mr. D. And with that, we're building an ecosystem where the consumer can sign up for one subscription program and get multitude of benefits. I think that's sort of the way the market is moving. It's moving away from share of category where businesses are looking more share of wallet. So when we can offer the consumer pick and pay groceries for free, Takealot deliveries for free, Mr. D restaurant food for free, we've launched Toy Kingdom on Mr. D. We've got a couple of exciting launches coming in the next 2 to 3 months where we truly believe this fundamental ecosystem offers the consumer something that they need to probably sign up for 2 or 3 other subscription programs to get the holistic benefit that they will get with Takealot More. And then I guess we've thought about our business as an ecosystem, and there from that perspective sprouts more opportunities that I think we can explore a bit later in this conversation.
I don't know if you can disclose any hard numbers around Take a Lot More subscriptions, but if you can't, maybe you could also go into some detail around how buying behavior has changed for those subscribers. Do you find they're a lot stickier? Do they tend to come back to the Take a Lot platform first before considering alternatives?
Yeah, so I guess we've been overwhelmed by the adoption. And it's not just the adoption, it's the retention on the program, as you say, Duncan. And I think what, if you look at it just merely on a business unit level, the takealot.com customer that signs up has become significantly more valuable in terms of frequency without necessarily losing the robustness of the AOV or the average order value, which with any subscription program becomes a risk. So they are more, they're shopping more frequently, they're shopping wider in terms of categories, because all of a sudden I can buy my roll-on without a minimum order threshold, I can get it delivered today, which sort of changes the shopping journey for the takealot.com customer. But then more excitedly, we see a lot of consumers multi-home now, where historically our overlap between takealot.com and Mr. D has not been that strong. I guess it was somewhere in the mid-20s in terms of the overlap in the base, and that's now shot up, where it's not just a more frequently engaging customer on takealot.com, but they're using Mr. D. And the exciting part is they're using Mr. D not just for the food, but we see the grocery business just accelerating. Like, that's been a fantastic surprise for us, is how the Take a Lot More program is driving our Pick and Pay partnership, which I think they are equally excited about. But again, Take a Lot More is in it. It's a baby. It's 1 year old. It still has its nappies on. So we looking to improve that offer considerably in the next 3 to 4 months. I mean, side peripheral benefits as you get News 24 media for free. That's a 99 Rand on its own subscription. So we're thinking quite wide and creatively around how do we make more something unique.
Pick and Pay, of course, has its own home delivery service that competes directly with 60/60 called Pick and Pay ASAP. Can you maybe just elaborate a little bit on your relationship with Pick and Pay and how you see that evolving over the next few years?
Yeah, so I think it's a strength rather than a fault line to have both entities, because you'll always have consumers that prefer to shop in ASAP for whatever reason. They might not be in the consideration set of Mr. D, or might not be somebody that's willing to sign up for the Take a Lot More program. But ultimately, it's a very complementary partnership. It's a strong partnership. We will definitely double down on this partnership in terms of what the value proposition means to the consumer. We back the grocery vertical. So I think we are super excited, and that will evolve over time, right? So obviously Checkers has got a strong game. Woolies has got a strong game. I assume Walmart will have a strong game in grocery. So the more, I think the businesses that compete in isolation will find it hard in the future, given some barriers to entry that's disappearing within verticals. So I think partnerships is a strong play to have, and we're super happy with our partnership with Pick and Pay.
Is it an exclusive partnership, or could you work with other grocery retailers as well, potentially?
No, so we try to keep this a marriage, because otherwise there's no point and there's no fixed investment appetite. So we're willing to invest in this, so we keep it quite tight.
Okay. Now, I just want to, just lastly on the Mr. D expansion and into new product categories, which of you, I mean, you've mentioned groceries, but are there other product categories that are, you think are going to be relatively easy to crack, and which ones do you think might be a bit tougher?
Yeah, no, good. So we've done some good studies to understand the mental models and the journeys that consumers go through, and it proliferates very quickly, where you then get this fragmented, hey, but what if somebody needs a hammer for a DIY project? Or hey, what if somebody needs this on demand? But there's probably a handful, 5 or 6, that I think will sway people's purchasing decision. And there you need to look at maybe the practical component of groceries, but also the emotional component. So we've seen fantastic success with the Toy Kingdom relationship. That's something we launched about 3 months ago. All their national stores are on the Mr. D platform at in-store pricing. We've launched our own dark store brand, Pet Express, about 2 months ago, where we deliver speciality pet food within 35 minutes. we've been phenomenally surprised in terms of how that resonates with the consumer. And then there's probably two or three more categories that we believe combined together with the food proposition and the grocery proposition will give the consumer enough reason to sign up to Take Lord More because they get the best of Mr. D and TakeLord.com.
Mm-hmm. That pet food category is surprisingly large, actually. I think there's a lot of demand for premium pet food. And when Fido needs to eat, he needs to eat, and then you need that food quickly.
Absolutely.
And I suppose when the kids need their toys as well.
Yeah, Spa started their play last week, I think. I can't remember. All the major grocers are going after the pet category. It's a massive category, growing fast and super profitable as well.
Yes, interesting. Let's talk a bit about logistics because you're doing a lot in that space as well. I know you've been experimenting with electric vehicles. Tell me what you're doing on that front and the role you see electric mobility playing in Takealot's fleet in future.
Yeah, so today we have the biggest electric fleet actually in Africa. We've got 28 trucks that run fully electric between our DCs and our hubs, which is our middle mile. They are powered 50% by solar from our facilities itself, because you know we've got these big facilities and we put solar on the roof. So we see that expanding in the middle mile, but also in the last mile where we've got 58 of these Mello vans. I don't know if you've seen them. The manufacturer is Stellenbosch. This looks like a bit of a triangle shape. Fun, funky execution, obviously lowered emissions, quieter. And then on the Mr. D side, we have strong partnerships with external vendors to drive our EV and our bikes. I think every South African can think about this problem, the noise pollution, not just the emissions that comes from these grocery on-demand bikes. You have your afternoon nap, and then the guys run through the road, and it's just disruptive. We have to think about not just the environmental impact, but also on the driver. The EV bike gives a lot more earning potential. We need to elevate the status and the earning potential of the driver. So EV plays nicely in a win-win situation for us on the food side as well.
Yes, I know. I always feel like I need to wear a face mask when the grocery deliveries arrive because of the pollution being bellowed out by the delivery bike. It's terrible.
Yeah, we need to solve that. And we are busy trying to solve it as best we can.
That's good to hear. What's the sort of time frame, do you think, on that? I mean, how aggressively are you going to roll out electric vehicles?
Look, it depends on how we can get the infrastructure in place. Because let's talk about the last mile delivery bikes. They work on this battery swap out infrastructure where you just drive into a petrol station and there's a vendor there that you can swap your battery out. We need to partner with them, get funding into that channel. I think that's a fantastic opportunity for anybody that wants to look at investment. And we've got two or three strong partners. We're also partnering with international agencies that we're working with through Prosus. We've recently joined a coalition of the 12 biggest delivery platforms globally. Through this coalition, we will look at how we can work with OEMs and how we can work with government to roll out the electrification of the last mile bikes as quick as possible. But I think it comes down to the appetite of the OEMs to invest in infrastructure in the country.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Staying with logistics, I want to ask you about the challenge of crime in South Africa. We know it is a big issue, and there has been some reporting lately about the high risks faced by delivery drivers. What's the real situation you're seeing on the ground regarding this, and how are you trying to fight the problem?
Yeah, so it is a problem, and I would say about 18, 24 months ago, we really started to proactively manage this because we do 99% of our orders ourselves, and we deliver everywhere in South Africa. We try to serve as many customers as we can, and with that, we're including the people that live in the high-risk areas, and therefore we believe e-commerce is a fundamental right. People need to have access to e-commerce. So we've augmented our vehicles. We've tried many a way to deter. And I think we've got control centers across the country that monitors every last mile vehicle. We've got visibility on every vehicle. We've got data on every vehicle. We've got some proprietary technology that tells us when a vehicle is potentially going to be a threat. But ultimately, it's not possible, I would say, in the short term to eradicate the problem. We need to manage it. And I think one fantastic way to do this, which is counterintuitive, is when you are seen within certain communities as a net positive to the community. And that's why we believe our Take Lot Township Economy Initiative is such a powerful program, because all of a sudden you change the minds of the people that live there, because they see you as a contributor to the community. The driver that delivers the parcel comes from two streets down. They know him by his name. Our personal shopper program brings employability. It brings livelihood into townships. And I think when you have that safe social safety net, it's not just the deterring of the crime, but it's actually that people see you as, hey, the community wants to protect this car, protect this vehicle, because they are not just extracting money from us, but they're actually plowing back and creating employment and opportunities for the people living in that area. I think you need both. You don't need only the soft side. You need both the hard and the soft side.
Take us through your Township Economy Initiative and how that market is growing currently.
That market, I mean, you can read whatever report you want, whether it's 900 billion or trillion, it's a big market. And it's a market that I don't think fundamentally is well understood. And we've seen that through our personal shopper program. So our Take Lot Township Economy Initiative has more formal components to it, where we will, we've got five now township franchisees, which we've signed up in the last 6 months. They will start doing deliveries in those townships. They will own the deliveries and appoint the drivers. But the part that I'm the most excited about, where we get the richest data from, is our personal shopper program, where we've got now 15, 16,000 personal shoppers in rural and township environments shopping on behalf of their family, friends, community. And there you see the robustness of the demand. You see the aspiration of the demand. It's not a transaction that speaks to necessity in all cases. It's people that buy up. They buy the biggest TV, the smartest fridge, the most attractive kettle, because for them to buy today, they need to get to two taxi stops maybe, where the personal shopper takes all friction away from them. So we are very happy about that. Our personal shop is now 18 months old. We're iterating on that, applying some tech. The brands that we work with are super excited about that, because it gives them a voice into a market that is very much fragmented and still very much driven by bricks and mortar and not digitalized. So we're very excited about that. It doesn't come at a worse economic for us, because our delivery is done in-house. Mm-hmm. So again, all South Africans need to be able to shop online safely and reliably.
Sounds like a real advantage you might have there in being a South African company and understanding the dynamics on the ground, whereas maybe some of the international players coming to this market still need to learn all of those lessons.
Yeah, I think the name of the game here is agility and responsiveness, and being willing to invest a little bit more in trial and error and having a finger on the pulse. So we are investing in market insight research. We've got our jet skis that we have in our organization. It's a term we use for an initiative that we quickly test. We assign product engineering resources to it. If it fails, it fails. If it succeeds, then we double down on that. So I think it's about agility and not being tied to a headquarter somewhere else that tells you what to do, or product rollout that is being done globally. It's agility married with, I would say, market insights that gives you this potentially edge. Yeah, that's sort of the way we think about it.
Okay. Just lastly, on the topic of logistics, I think you recently launched, or you're about to launch, a B2B logistics arm. I think it's called Take A Lot Fulfillment Services. Just tell us a bit about that and what the thinking is behind it.
Yeah, so maybe the backstory there is 2016, I remember the year after I started, I've been here now close to 10 years, we had a disastrous Black Friday. I think the people were queuing up at our pickup points. And we realized then that if we want to win in this market, we need to double down on logistics infrastructure, both the walls and wheels side, but also the technology side. So we built quite scalable and bespoke technology in terms of how we do our fulfillment. We've got tech that none of the incumbent couriers have. And today we're doing about 1/5, maybe 22% of last mile deliveries already in the country. So
sure.
We're really the biggest courier in the country. And the thinking here is we've built the infrastructure, we built the tech, and let's start externalizing that tech to the market. And the initial play is B2B, is where we're giving our suppliers and sellers full logistics solutions, with from import freight forwarding and clearing into bulk breaking and distribution. We can do that for basically in bricks and mortar retailers as well. We're doing that for our suppliers and our sellers, which just augments our platform. But from April, I would say May next year, we're going to expose the B2C side of this, where anyone in the country with a Shopify store, a WooCommerce store, can plug in into our logistics tech. We can do deliveries for them. And I think our excitement there is around not just the tech that we have, but also the economies of scale that we have, because we've built this fantastic network which runs a fifth of the last mile deliveries in the country. And if we expose that externally, everybody wins. So we've got a competitive cost advantage, but also tech advantage. So that also helps us think about revenue diversification, because your point earlier is e-commerce is 10% of the market. If that goes to 20%, we want to grow with the market. We don't just want to grow on the B2C transactions through Mr. D and TakeLot. We want to grow and support the penetration of e-commerce. So super excited about that. Again, this is a three-month-old baby. Mm-hmm. Still a lot of hard work to be done, but I'm super excited. The brand resonates. It's a clear value proposition. It gives the credibility of TakeLot.com in the name. To your point, TakeLot Fulfillment Solutions. And I think people don't know this, but today we are doing all the e-commerce fulfillment for probably five of the biggest listed retailers, because we acquired Media 24 Logistics September last year. And then part of that, we've onboarded five listed retailers as our clients. They are super happy growing. And the more we can help them grow quicker, the more e-commerce grows. So we're pretty much in the e-commerce game, and we want the category to grow.
Interesting. Would you consider doing logistics for your direct competitors in the e-commerce space as well, if they were to approach you?
Look, I think we will be selective, because competition is not always that clearly defined. But for example, today we are doing this for some of our competitors. It might not be the big international ones, mm-hmm. or the local ones, but we'll see. I think there is a trend towards, if you've got the infrastructure and you've got the asset, sweat the asset, but we'll be selective in that.
Okay. Now, I was intrigued to see recently that you're getting into the home loans business. Now, this seems to be very much from left field. What are you doing in home loans, and why?
Look, so I think fundamentally we've built, I think, a trusted brand over the last 12 years by doing what we say we're going to do and focusing on the consumer. And because we've got that trust and we've got a highly engaged platform where we get multiples of millions of visits per day, reasonable to assume that we can expand our value proposition into more of a fintech marketplace play. And it makes natural sense, because as a retailer, you've got more data on anyone else. Retail data is the richest data that you can find. We've got the Mr. D data. So put together, we've got quite a holistic view of the customer. And we believe that if we test these things, and for example, a home loan hub is a partnership with Mortgage Market, it's very low investment for us, again, to my point of jet skis, but potentially a very high rich revenue stream. And we've been surprised over the last month how many people have gone through that funnel. And again, fintech and e-commerce, you look at Kaspi, it's a Kazakhstan business, how fintech and e-commerce is coming together, because it's a natural fit, whether it's through value-added services or through finance or embedded finance. You have today some of the biggest legacy grocery retailers becoming fintech players. You have banks becoming mobile network operators. Mm. So you need to think about your business outside of your vertical. And I think that for us is a very interesting step forward, but obviously more to come from that.
Okay. Sounds like you're doing a lot of experimentation to see what sticks, what might work. And if it works, then you move quickly in that direction. If it doesn't work, kill it quickly.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
I have to remain agile.
Yeah. Agile. Yeah. Just lastly then, Fred, in 3 to 5 years from now, what does the Takealot business look like? Which business units do you believe are going to be the growth engines going forward? And how will the mix that we see today differ 3 to 5 years from now?
I think maybe two things. One is the nascency of the retail media category in South Africa, where we have advertising in our solution for suppliers and sellers and non-endemics that engage on our platform. So we've got a lot of inventory in the retail media advertising space that we are selling and monetizing today. But that's still under indexes in terms of global standards. So we see a lot of profit and growth coming from that because, again, to my point is we've got such a rich data set on the consumer across groceries, food, and takealot.com. So that's something that we're very excited about. And then I think if you think about the trends globally, and you see that you initially started to see this in the East with JD.com and Meituan in China, where 24/7 you can buy anything on demand. It's eroding their profits. Meituan had a very bad results recently, but ultimately the consumer has been trained to receive stuff on demand. And I think for us, the Mr. D platform has got explosive growth capabilities. Given that we have the high frequency category of groceries that's growing nicely, but once you start enabling the consumer to let's say, for example, I'm takealot.com, I want to buy this item, and hey, but I can get it on demand. We have Takealot now today, but how do we embed on demand capabilities within the takealot.com platform where we can offer you anything in 35, 40 minutes? That's sort of, I think, where we have to start thinking. That's where the consumer is going to go. And then I think geographically and consumer-wise, the township environment is such a wonderful opportunity because we live by the purpose that we want to change lives in South Africa for the better through e-commerce. And when you sit with people that live in rural areas and in townships, it's scary what they have to go through to buy the basics, a kettle, a toaster, sandwich press. It's a couple of transport they need to take there and back again, little price transparency. So I think from a consumer market perspective, that's a big opportunity for us.
It's interesting what you say about retail media. I guess in China in particular, there's a lot of, how do you describe it? I guess if you remember those ads in the old days on television where they would say, dial this number now. And you probably remember that. Infomercials, yes. There's a lot of that going on TikTok and real-time video platforms now with influencers selling products directly on camera to live audiences. When you say retail media, is that the sort of thing you have in mind?
No, so retail media is just, it's either brand building, top of the funnel awareness or bottom of the funnel visibility and discovery asset that we sell. Let's say, for example, if you search for a smartwatch on our platform, the first four listings will be sponsored listings, or there will be a sponsored video that pops up and you can watch this beautiful video. That's retail media, maybe in a nutshell. But live streaming is something that, again, to our point of jet skis, we've got the jet ski and we understand what the tech platform is. China is really, really innovative. I think their people, it's billions of dollars that gets traded in minutes. South Africa might not be there yet. I think we're maybe 2-3 years away from that, but it's definitely something that we are thinking about. We do live shopping for 24 hours around our main events. So we are seeing the engagement increasing, but not to the extent that I think this is a 6 to 12 months play, but maybe a 24 months play that we have to button down.
Just lastly, it's obviously taken decades for us to get to this point where we're reaching 10% of total retail sales. How long is it going to take to get to 15% and then to 20%?
Look, I think it's definitely not a linear relationship. It's exponential. It's going to grow because as categories come online, as more consumers come online, as service delivery improves, because I think with competition, prices goes down, delivery thresholds come down, speed goes up, people just get stuff faster. So I think we 2030, we have to be close to double where we are today.
Wow.
In terms of market size. So what the retail market as a whole is going to do, that's for us to see. That's more driven by the fundamentals with the economy. But I do believe north of 15% in the next five years is definitely possible.
Wow. Frederik Zietzman is Group CEO of Takealot. It's always good to chat to you here on Tech Central, Fred, and thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you for your time, Duncan. Look forward to seeing you again.